All right, thank you for that introduction. Yeah, as you mentioned, my name is Casey Schmidt. I'm a SOMR science student at the University of Florida. I'll actually be defending in about 10 days after this talk, so I'm just going to run through my entire dissertation in 15 minutes. So, just kidding, just the highlights. Let's see, so let me just click here. So, shown here in yellow are long-term groundwater nitrogen concentrations at an agricultural property that we've been monitoring. And you can see some of these concentrations are pretty high as 49 milligrams per liter. And this groundwater at this site is transported laterally in this property towards the forested portion, and it's discharged through a variety of seepage slopes to some of these streams draining the property. And there's likely some denitrification occurring during this process because these are waterlogged, carbon-rich environments, but it tends to be pretty low. It's not enough. The nitrate concentrations discharging from this site are about 7.5 milligrams per liter, and there's a pretty significant nitrogen load. And we've been monitoring this stream for quite some time. And so what we propose is to amp up this process whereby groundwater is transported into surface waters through these riparian zones and seepage slopes. And we did this with a denitrification wall, which is a permeable reactive barrier where you put some sort of a carbon amendment into the ground to intercept groundwater flow perpendicularly. And the carbon amendment serves to reduce the dissolved oxygen in the groundwater, and then it serves as an electron donor for the denitrification process to convert nitrate to innocuous nitrogen gas. And the idea is you have high nitrate on the upgradient side and low nitrate on the downgradient side. And because you're taking advantage of natural groundwater flow gradients, this is all a passive process. There's no pumping required. In addition, we wanted to look at, a lot of people have done some denitrification wall work and looked at treatment in localized sort of groundwater plumes. We wanted to see if we could make an impact at the surface water scale within some of these streams draining the property. So we sort of targeted this denitrification wall right above the headwaters of a stream. And this is a pretty significant headwaters. It begins as a seepage slope, and it's literally sort of gushing out of the side of this break in elevation. And it's about 70% of the stream discharge. And we knew before we put this wall in that there's a lot of groundwater being funneled through this site. The pore water velocities are about 0.8 meters per day, or 2.5 feet per day, which is really fast for groundwater, much faster than many other denitrification walls. Additionally, we noticed there was, and this is sort of a transect, we noticed that there was a dip in water table elevation corresponding right to where that seepage headwaters was occurring. So we know we put the wall in an area where groundwater from sort of a wide area was funneled to this surface water discharge, and we can target the denitrification wall appropriately to get high treatment volumes. So we constructed this denitrification wall. It's one of the larger denitrification walls in the world. We constructed it with 50% sand, 50% sawdust. I'm in that picture for scale, so you can see how big this thing is. The groundwater is going to flow from right to left. Same for you guys. Right to left. You can see his container plant nursery on the right-hand side. And the left-hand side, we have sort of a forested, more natural area. After this picture was taken, we backfilled this to the surface. You wouldn't really know that it was there, except for the well transects that we put in, which you can actually see from Google Earth. And we put these well transects in to monitor changes in nitrate concentration with flow distance. So we put wells up gradient, within, and down gradient. We did this in triplicate. And we had pretty dramatic results in the groundwater. Shown on the y-axis is total nitrogen concentration. I don't know if that's cut off. Total nitrogen concentration, and this is day 7 through day 294 for the upgradient well, day 7 to 294 for the center, and the same for the downgradient well in the gray and orange and blue colors. The lighter color is nitrate. The darker color is total TKN, total killed all nitrogen. And so we had about a 79% nitrate reduction in about 5.5 feet of groundwater flow. So it was a pretty significant result. When I got that first set of data back, I was very excited that we'd spent our money wisely. But the TKN actually increased slightly from 0.3 to 0.9. There's lots of processes that can do this, possible DNRA, net mineralization, other possibilities. But regardless, the total nitrogen decreased by 66% with this application. So as I mentioned, we really wanted to look at the effect more at the surface water scale, not solely within groundwater. So we monitored two streams. One stream which should be affected by the denitrification wall installation, and one stream with similar land use, similar fertilizer application rate, and the same climate, which should not be affected. And at each one of these two sites, we set up weirs and pressure transducers. We took flow-weighted samples with auto samplers continuously for a long time period. And in that way, we can measure a true nitrogen load. And the results at the stream scale were actually more dramatic than we saw in the groundwater. You can see these are nitrogen load on the y-axis, and you can see where we installed the denitrification wall, and the load decreased pretty dramatically, about 74% nitrogen reduction, or about 406 kilograms of nitrogen per year. So that's pretty dramatic results as well. We continued to monitor this over a longer time period, and you see there are some periods where we have some pretty high nitrogen loading. So we thought, well, maybe the denitrification wall is losing its efficacy over time. And there is some evidence from some of these other walls that there is a slight decline in the first year, and this is pretty small, as some of the maybe the more bioavailable components are leached out. But the rates measured after 1 year tend to be somewhat indicative of long-term rates, at least on the order of 15 years and possibly longer. And in addition to this, we had some really large storms in the wintertime and some combined with low evapotranspiration. And nitrogen load is predominantly driven by hydrology. So that largely explains these large peaks. But I wanted to come up with a way to sort of estimate the range of nitrate removal rates and come up with a long-term rate. So I took a period 1 year after the wall was installed that had no significant difference in discharge, rainfall, or evapotranspiration, and we still had a 65% nitrogen reduction. So the true answer is probably somewhere between the two. It's still quite a large reduction rate that we're seeing in this study. And if I did sort of a back-of-the-envelope calculation, and if you use this 65% N reduction rate and assume these walls are going to last 15 years, which that's probably a very conservative estimate, actually, it was about 79 cents per kilogram of nitrogen treated, which is quite competitive with other treatment methods. Just to sort of beat a dead horse, these are nitrogen concentrations in the control and the treatment stream. Treatment, they went down dramatically very fast, whereas the control, we actually saw a significant increase in nitrogen during the same time period. So we also did soil sampling. I don't have a lot of time to talk about this today, but at each one of these black dots, we took soil samples, brought them back to the lab, analyzed them for denitrification rate utilizing the acetylene block method. But one of the interesting findings we found is that we only were able to detect denitrification at these samples collected at the leading edge of the wall. And so this indicates the nitrate is becoming limited within a couple of inches upon entering the wall, and it's so much so that the bacteria aren't even really making the enzymes to a significant extent anymore. And we know that that occurs. The bacteria tend to be pretty frugal. And so denitrification is only occurring really at the leading edge of this wall. Another line of evidence we had is if you delve into these individual transects in the wells, you can see the two wells that had 5 milligrams per liter influent concentrations consistently had 100% reductions in that center well, whereas the third transect had 9 milligrams per liter influent, and it had much greater than 50% reduction. So this wall is oversized. The nitrogen is all is all gone by the time it reaches the other side of the wall. I should mention, we did maximize some of the properties associated with denitrification rate. We have really high groundwater temperature. We live in Florida. I used 50% wood volume, which is higher than many other denitrification walls. Lastly, we noticed that this center transect had 100% reduction even in that downgradient well, whereas these two edge transects, that reduction tended to decline, indicating that groundwater that's discharging to that stream is going around the wall. So we could achieve greater treatment volumes by sort of shrinking down the size and making it wider to maximize treatment volume. So we wanted to come up with a design model to improve the design, to provide design guidelines for future construction of these denitrification walls in order to maximize the efficiency and the transferability. And the idea is if we were to use different wood concentrations, different types, could we then scale it appropriately, so that people could input different groundwater velocities, temperature, and nitrate concentrations in order to achieve desired results. And we did this with a mesocosm study. This is a study that I designed. It was a continuous flow groundwater solar-powered study that we ran for about 9 months. And in each one of these mesocosms, we packed them with 10 different treatments in triplicate, and we did different wood types, different particle sizes, and different concentrations. We did 10, 25, and 50% by volume, and we continuously pumped groundwater through these treatments. Because we couldn't measure every type of denitrification reactor media, we wanted to come up with some predictors of denitrification rate, some easily measurable predictors that people could use in order to design these in the future. And so we did a standard fiber analysis where we looked at these different components. We did total nitrogen, total carbon, and C-to-N ratio. And we did somewhat of a novel method where we did surface area, and this is microporous surface area, utilizing CO2 sorptometry. And the idea is that we would come up with a model where somebody could measure a few predictors and estimate the denitrification rate in order to design these denitrification walls. And so we came up with a multiple linear regression model. And we did this in a stepwise procedure so we could minimize the number of predictor variables in order for ease of measurement. And we could also choose the most unique, strong predictors. So sort of the idea is expressed here. I hypothesize that the temperature is going to play a strong role in denitrification rate, as well as some of these carbon quality parameters. So if you combine all these into a model, you can pretty strongly predict denitrification rate. But we may want to throw out this percent C and LOI because it really only uniquely explains a sliver of the data. It has a lot of overlap with the fiber component in this theoretical example. So looking at some of these individual predictors, and these are relationships to average denitrification rate, you can see that temperature is the strongest predictor. It explains 32% of the variability uniquely. It has an exponential relationship, as you would expect. The second strongest predictor is related to carbon quality. This is neutral detergent fiber. And it's important to note that neutral detergent fiber had a much stronger relationship to denitrification rate than total carbon and percent LOI, which are just total wood volume. And so this indicates that carbon quality is important, not just quantity. Lastly, surface area played a significant role, which tended to taper off at high values, so I changed the model accordingly. And this is a graph of the actual versus predicted. We did a pretty good job of predicting the nitrate reduction rates, utilizing temperature, neutral detergent fiber, surface area, and saturated hydraulic conductivity had a slight negative scaling as well. And so somebody could measure these variables somewhat easily and come up with denitrification rate. Surface area would be a little bit tricky. They may have to use particle size rather than surface area for a given wood type. But as it turns out, we could use wood volume alone to make some pretty good rule of thumb guidelines. And these are wood volumes that are pooled of all the different wood types and all the different wood sizes. And this is an analysis of covariance that I did utilizing temperature as a quadratic covariant. And we did this. We were able to measure this over a wide range of temperatures because these things were above ground. Believe it or not, we had icicles outside of the mesocosm one day in Florida, and of course it gets stinking hot in the summertime, so we had pretty high temperatures as well. But there were significant differences in wood volumes. Temperature was a significant interaction. And the nice thing about using wood volume is it's really easy for an average landowner to sort of come up with some design guidelines to size these denitrification walls. So if you knew you were using 10, 25, or 50% wood volume, you knew the minimum groundwater temperature, and you knew your influent nitrate concentration, based on this design, these design guidelines, you could come up with a detention time required to remove all of that nitrogen, and you could scale it appropriately utilizing pore water velocities that are measured. I think I'm starting to run out of time, but denitrification walls can impact surface waters. These nitrate reduction rates tend to be really high, higher than I think we have thought in the past, and so maximizing treatment volume by increasing the efficiency of these walls is preferable, and the denitrification rate is dependent on carbon quality, surface area, and total wood concentration, and would need to be scaled appropriately. I'd like to thank colleagues, funding agencies, collaborators who are making snow angels in the denitrification wall there. And with that, I'd be happy to take questions if we have time.
We have time for one question.
Okay. Louis.
Yeah. What kind of QT did you get on the denitrification?
It was high. It was about 3.5. I mean, I know the rule of thumb is 2, but I've consistently found it to be higher than 2. I know other people have found, lower than 2, so it tended to be pretty high. But I measured over a pretty wide range. I mean, from 7 up to 25, I think, is what I measured it at. All right. Thank you.